I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 123 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Amanda from Hollywood Consumer. Welcome back to the show, Amanda.
Thanks. Excited to be here.
Yeah, especially because, you know, you start off with George doing what you do when you watch this part of the movie. Not just you, a lot of people, you know, I do tear up also, so that's fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't meant as a jibe. No, not at all, not at all. Not a jab. So minute 123 begins with George continuing to weep and ends with George looking up at the town sign. So yesterday we ended things with George running away from a crazed police officer, Bert, who shot 6 bullets at him and then continued chasing him even though he didn't have any more bullets in his gun. I guess in the car maybe he has a few more, he has more bullets that he's reloading as he's going to chase him. And George makes it all the way back to the infamous bridge and starts praying to Clarence, which doesn't do him any good. And then he decides to pray to God. And then what do you know? his prayers are answered. We see the snow start to fall. And today begins with, George just looking very sad. You know, he's still crying out for help. And then we see the police car pull up behind him. And the first thing that I noticed when I was watching this is, do you notice that Bert actually gets out of the wrong side of the car?
I didn't notice that.
Because what we see as the car pulls up is the passenger side. Mm-hmm. And then Bert gets out of the car from that side, which tells you that that somehow he moved over to get out on that side, I guess, because, you know, we didn't see, because he got in on the right-hand side.
So maybe
he got in on the left-hand side and now left on the right-hand side.
Maybe it's a bench seat and he's able to slide over, because isn't it that the passenger side is up by the curb? Maybe that's less snow that he has to walk through or something.
It's very possible. That would be a good explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just think it's very funny that we see that he gets out on the wrong side. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why, you know, maybe he was concerned of, you know, cars coming on the other side. So, you know, like, you know, people tell children, you know, always get off on the side of the curb, you know, so maybe Bert realizes that's what he should be doing after, you know, shooting up Pottersville.
Yeah.
Even though, again, this is the good Bert, not the evil Bert. So, you know, but we don't know that. And then Bert screams out, "Hey, George, you all right? What's the matter?" And George is very frightened still, and he goes, "Get out of here, Bert, or I'll hit you again. Get out of here." And then Bert says to him, "What the Sam Hill you yelling for, George?" Now, I always used to think that this phrase was Sam Hell, not Sam Hill. Do you have any idea what Sam Hill means?
I'm sure there's a there's a story and a reference to some legend or historical figure that I just don't know.
Okay, so Sam Hill, like I said, I always thought it was hell, but Sam Hill is a euphemism that is basically for the term the devil or hell. The expression dates back all the way to the 1830s. And it was, and they don't know specifically where it comes from, but there are many different guesses as to what the origin of it. Okay, I mean, like I said, they know that it started somewhere, or that it was used in the early 19th century. So, you know, it's one thing is that it's a euphemism for the devil. So you have H.L. Mencken. Do you know who H.L. Mencken was?
Mm-mm.
He was a reporter who, if I remember correctly, was part of the Scopes monkey trial, if I remember correctly. So he says that it comes from the name Samiel, S-A-M-I-E-L, which is the name of the devil in a German opera named Der Freischutz, which was being performed in New York City in the around 1825. And the phrase Sam Hill is a variant of Samil. That's what he basically says.
Huh.
Another explanation is that it was the name of a store owner in Arizona. There was a mercantile store owner who offered a vast and diverse inventory of goods in Arizona, and people began using the term, what in the Sam Hill is that, to describe something they found odd or unusual, just like the inventory that they found in that particular store. The original Sam Hill mercantile building is still in Prescott, Arizona, on Montezuma Street, and it is listed as on the Register of Historic Places. Another explanation is that it is a politician in Connecticut. So there was an article in New England Magazine in December 1889, which talks about that between 1727 and 1752, there was a man named Sam Hill who represented Guilford, Connecticut, in 43 out of 49 sessions of the legislature. And when he died, his son began to reign in his stead. And apparently it's a popular phrase in Connecticut for people to say, give him Sam Hill, because of the fact that this was a politician that was so popular. Another explanation is possibly a surveyor in Michigan. There was a surveyor named Samuel W. Hill who lived from 1819 to 1889. And he was living in the Keweenaw Peninsula area. And he used to use foul language. And therefore, you know, people would use his name as a euphemism for swear words. You know, in order to not have to use real swear words, you say, oh, we'll just use the name of the guy who's always swearing. You know, so they would say, what the Sam Hill are you doing? Or things like that. Two more. Another one is that there was the Adjutant General of Kentucky, Samuel Hill, who was sent by the governor of Kentucky to deal with the Hatfields and McCoys family feud in 1887. And the newspapers around the country were waiting for this man Hill to give up, you know, to give out the information. So they always would say, what in the Sam Hill was going on up there? I don't really buy that one. And then the final one here is they say is the name of a millionaire in the Pacific Northwest. So there was a millionaire named Samuel Hill, who was a businessman and a good roads advocate in the Pacific Northwest. And in the 1920s, and apparently he convinced Queen Maria of Romania to travel to rural Washington in order to dedicate a museum that Hill was trying to to promote. And basically, he was known as the father of good roads. But the people claim that this is probably not where it comes from, because, you know, it happened a century after most of the other ones, you know, when people think that it actually originated. But I don't know. It's a bunch of interesting ideas of where it possibly came from.
Yeah.
You know, I actually think that the best one here is the I like the store owner in Arizona story. I think that
yeah,
one,
I like
to me that.
That
was the, you know, it sounds the best. But it probably is just a euphemism for the devil, and that's it.
Yeah. I was gonna say yeah. I think I like the Arizona store story the best, but yeah, I think it's probably just a reference to the devil.
Exactly. Instead of saying hell, you're saying hill, and that's it.
Yeah. No, I think
that's more or less what it comes to. So after Bert says this phrase to George, George starts, you know, to retort and says, "You," and then he goes, "George, Bert, do you know me?" Because, you know, he realizes that, you know, Bert has actually used his name. So he's sincerely in shock about this whole thing. And then he goes, "No, you kidding? I've been looking all over town trying to find you. I saw your car piled into that tree back there, and I thought maybe you..." And then he looks at him and goes, "Hey, your mouth's bleeding. You sure you're all right? What did?" And then George, you know, looks around. Now, I mean, we've talked about this numerous times over the last 123 episodes, you know, that Bert and George have been friends for a long time. You know, there's even a theory, I think it was mentioned earlier this week, that Bert and Ernie were actually two of the other kids that were, you know, playing on the ice at the very beginning of the movie. But we weren't able to find actual proof of that. You know, it's just a good assumption, you know, of what it could be.
Yeah, I like that.
But yeah, but they've been, me too. But they've been friends for a long time. That we know. So the whole question is, you know, George is just shocked that this Bert is actually the good Bert, and that he's back into the thing. Now, what's really interesting is the way that, you know, Bert says to him, "I thought maybe you..." Do you think that Bert was concerned that he was possibly going to jump off the bridge, and that's why he came there?
Yeah, I think. Well, I think definitely. I mean, Bert, I'm sure, has gone out looking for George because, well, Mary has called people and indicated that something's going on. We know that from earlier in the movie, because once George storms off, she calls and, you know, tells the children to pray for him, and then he is out of character at the bar when he gets hit, and Martini and Nick, I'm sure, are concerned. And so there have been a couple of, I think, previous indicators that people at certain points have noticed that something is off with George, and everybody wants to find him as quickly as possible. And I would not have all been surprised that Bert would have been brought into that, because he's, you know, a police officer, and he's gonna probably have the most authority to go around looking for him.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's fair. No, but the question is whether you think that everyone believes that George is going to commit suicide, or that he's just, you know, he just missed it.
Well, you know, yeah, I think that maybe some are worried that he's going to hurt himself. Others are just worried that he's gone off. But I think Bert finding him, Bert coming to the bridge is probably more of an indicator that he's worried that, from these reports, that George is likely to do something to hurt himself.
Okay. All right. Makes sense. Because, I mean, the reason I ask is because, you know, you don't get an indication that anyone was actually that concerned about George doing something to himself. They were just concerned that George is distraught. You know,
Well, I don't know.
even Martini, I mean, Martini says to him, stay here because you're drunk, not because
Yeah.
I think you're going to go kill yourself. I think you might hurt yourself doing something.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's kind of a fine line because, like I said, I think everybody is definitely concerned, and perhaps we'll never kind of get the insight into this, but perhaps all this time has passed, and after Mary's probably notification and Martini's and anybody else that might have seen George, somebody might have seen George near the bridge. It's probably like we were talking about before, it's probably been a couple hours now. And if Bert is looking for him and it's been a couple hours and he's not at all of the regular places that George would normally go when he's just even feeling distraught, then I think there's a little bit more of a red flag that's going off for people. And so I think probably, yeah, Bert at least, and again, makes sense that maybe he would be the one because as a police officer, he probably has some experience with that.
Well, he also has experience shooting people, so
Yes. Apparently not, though, because he didn't shoot George.
no, he just shot out the Pottersville sign. That's it. Right. At this point, George then touches his mouth, to see if he really is bleeding. And then this has always made me laugh. The way that he like sticks his tongue out to lick the wound on the side of his mouth,
Yeah.
it just, to me, it's a little over the top the way that he's doing it. I
I
can't
kind of
imagine
like
myself
it.
doing something like that.
I kind of like it because I think it's again, it's another physical thing that Jimmy Stewart can do to indicate the mood change that George is going through. He's going from being depressed and thinking that he's no longer existing in the world to the first sign that he is actually back alive in the world that he should be with people that know him is that his lip is bleeding. And so he is overjoyed and overexcited to find out if that's true. So I think the gesture is, the tongue coming out very kind of overdramatic, fits in with that sort of mood change.
Okay. That makes sense too, I guess. Again, it's just, to me, I think he just overdoes it. That's what it comes
Yeah.
down to. He starts looking around, and he's trying to figure out like what's going on, and then he reaches into his pocket and pulls out the petals, and he goes, "My mouth's bleeding, Bert. My mouth's." And then he goes, "Zuzu's petals, Zuzu, there they are." And he goes, "Bert, what do you know about that?" And Bert is just completely confused about this whole thing because he has no idea what's going on. I mean, he knows that George apparently, somehow, got a fat lip, but he doesn't know exactly what happened.
Yeah. Well, and now maybe he's concerned in a different way. So we talked about maybe he comes to the bridge concerned that George is going to do something to hurt himself, and now George is completely, 180 in terms of his mood and behavior, and Bert might be a little concerned something else is going on.
That's right.
That
Yeah, it's a little strange way to do it. And then I like the fact though that they bring in once again the whole thing with Zuzu's petals, showing how
Yeah.
important that idea is for this whole, movie. That he had just put these little petals into the little watch pocket in his pants, and they disappeared and reappeared. I guess your grandfather or your grandmother would be able to do little tricks like that too.
Yeah. Pull the coin out from behind your ear kind of thing. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Pull the petals out from behind your ear.
pocket.
Exactly. It makes you wonder what Bert is thinking this whole time. And then George just looks at him and goes, "Merry Christmas." And he goes, "Well, Merry Christmas." He's like, "Okay, whatever." And then George just like runs off, leaves him, and he starts once again calling out for Mary. "Mary, Mary." Like he knows she's nowhere around, but he's still calling out to her. He's basically saying, "I'm back in the right universe. I need to find Mary."
Yeah, I like that.
And then I love the fact that we see him continue to run, and he sees his car, and you can see he's so happy that his car got into an accident. Most people would not act that way.
Yeah, well, it goes all back to his lip is bleeding, Zuzu's petals, the car, Bert knowing him, everything is lining back up to, yes, I'm in the right space. Everybody remembers me. I haven't, been erased from existence. And calling out to Mary is his. He's got to confirm. It's the last piece of the puzzle. He's already being reassured that he's back to normal. The last piece is getting Mary to recognize and that he's, her soulmate.
Right. That's true. But he believes that he's in the right place for that.
Yes.
So the hope is that he'll find her, but he's not gonna find her just on the street.
Well, you never know. He did
And not
find her
at the
on the street
library.
before.
That's right. And also not at the library. Oh yeah, she's at the library. There you go. Right. And then, as he's the scene changes again, and we see him once again in downtown what is now Bedford Falls, and we see the sign that says "Welcome to Bedford Falls." And he's once again ecstatic about the fact that he is back in the right place. And that's how this minute ends, as he's just looking up at the sign. Another good spot this week, during these episodes to cut the minute. It's a nice framing shot.
I feel like I got really lucky. I feel like I got some of the best minutes, not just of the movie, but in terms of start to finish of a scene or a sequence.
Yeah, and again, we all know that that's random, because I don't think Frank Capra, was it 78 years ago, was thinking, "Now, how am I gonna do this so that when they do this movie, when they do this minute by minute, decades from now, so that everything will work out really well?" We could hope, but no, didn't happen. All right. So this is usually done on Tuesday, but since Amanda won't be with us on Tuesday, so every Saturday or every guest. Today is Saturday, so we have a segment called "Off the Beaten Track," where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is an inspirational story. So, Amanda, you have a story for us?
Yeah, I do. I don't know how inspiring it is. It's a story that I like that just makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside and reminds me of the people in my life that I love and that obviously love me. And it's actually a Christmas story, so I think it's very fitting for this. I moved to Texas 4 years ago. And I've been very fortunate to have made quite a few friends here. And one of my closest friends this past year gave me a wonderful Christmas gift. And I think it's kind of a funny story in terms of the present that I got and how I got it, and then sort of the whole way that it tied together in the end. So this friend of mine, she wasn't able to make it to our Christmas Eve party. Her husband was, and so he brought the gifts, and we exchanged. But we didn't get to open gifts together. So I was opening my gift the next day, and it was a very nice thing that she had given me a book, and then she had given me a couple of Polaroid pictures from a couple of the things that we'd done together before. But it was in a very nice package. And so I texted her and I said, you know, oh, thank you so much. This is so great. And, you know, she texted back about the gift that she had gotten. And then she was texting me later and she's like, you know, did you look in the package a little bit more? And I said, well, no. And at this point, we had gone out for the day. And so I was like, well, I got to make sure I get back. I'm glad I didn't throw the box out. And when I got back, I was able to get the package, the box that the package came in, and open it. And she had put in a whole bunch of this like filler stuff that you put in for packaging. And underneath it was the real gift. And it was a gift to me and my dad. And the background on that is my dad and I, it's a very weird thing, we are big Jack in the Box fans. Jack in the Box, the restaurant. It's a thing that is a
I think you meant the actual Jack in the Box.
Yeah, I know. I realized as I said it, I was like, I got to make sure people understand this is the fast food restaurant. They're very common in California. They're not very common in Texas. And the one that is closest to us, we have to drive about 20 minutes to. And, you know, the food, it's fast food, but there's just something about it. Maybe it's because we grew up on it. And we always would get, they'd have seasonal Jack antenna toppers. And I don't know if you're familiar with the restaurant. Jack is sort of the spokesperson guy, you know, it's kind of like Ronald McDonald, and you have Jack from Jack in the Box, and it's a guy in a suit with a giant, like, pinball head.
Okay.
makes for a perfect antenna topper, because it's just this like white ball with a couple of blue dots for eyes and like a little yellow hat and then whatever sort of seasonal thing. We used to get those antenna toppers all the time. I don't know if they don't sell them anymore or if the Texas stores just don't have them, but we've been here 4 years. We've never been able to get a replacement. The last, you know, major storm that we had ruined the one that I had. So I've talked to my friend about this plenty of times. So for Christmas, in addition to the lovely other gift that she got me, underneath all of this packing stuff were about 20 Jack antenna toppers. And
oh, wow.
She had just gone on like Etsy or eBay or something and bought, you know, I'm sure somebody just had like a box of them or something. And that was her gift to us because she knew how much we loved the restaurant and how much we were missing. And this is, like I said, it's just something that I, you know, had mentioned a couple times, is like, I was really bummed because my Jack, you know, antenna topper had to finally be thrown away. And so I just thought it was just very thoughtful. One, that she remembered that was a thing that we liked. And then two, that she actually went out and was able to find them. And first thing that my dad and I did was we put a little New Year's Eve one. Because like I said, this is right around Christmas. And we each had a New Year's Eve one on our car for the new year. And it was just really, really sweet. And like I said, it was, you know, Christmas is, I always like to say, it's, you know, it's not about the gifts, it's about the thought. And I just thought it was a very thoughtful gift. And like I said, this is somebody who I didn't know 4 years ago. And now she's one of my closest friends. And I just feel very,
very.
And she
got to know how much you like Jack in the Box.
Yep. Yeah. And knew that I would appreciate the gift as much as I did.
Wow. That's really cool. I like that story.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. All right. Thank you for that. So, Amanda, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Amanda?
Yes, they can find me at hollywoodconsumer.wordpress.com or at @Hollywood_consumer on Instagram.
All right. Great. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So, until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.